Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Jenny Wren. I've been a festival booker for over 15 years, mom of two, four if you count the dogs. I've buried my sister and my parents, partied like it was 1999 for over 20 years, modeled for 5 minutes, worn far too many accessories and not enough self-care. I've had breast cancer and epiphanies. Safe to say, she's been around. You're listening to Hindsight Conversations, where my guests are invited to bring to the table what it is they want to discuss, feel ready to share from where they are in their lives. We meet it together with no agenda. No topic is off limits, from the frivolous to the profound, the gnarly to the joyful, painful to the practical. Red flag moments you can only see when looking back, but looking back to move forward. Join me weekly where we explore the 2020 vision of hindsight. Everyone has it. In this episode, we speak to Harriet. Harriet J.W. is the founder of the artist network and podcast Girls to the Front, a platform to connect and educate artists that identify as women. She is also the founder and host of music platform Secret Sessions. What started as a YouTube channel has grown into one of the UK's most well-respected live shows and music brands. Harriet has worked with hundreds of influential artists and creators, from acts like Ed Sheeran, Passenger and Bastille, to Kacey Musgraves, Mahalia and Freya Ridings. Listen to Harriet's incredible story of resilience and tenacity.
Probably the biggest thing that's happened to me in my life that at the time just felt like nothing because I was 16. So when I was 16, I was hit by a car and I spent two weeks in a coma and broke pretty much every bone in my body and, you know, was a whisker away from death. But I think why that's interesting to me, because at the time I was very much like, ugh, why is everyone making such a big deal out of this? Like, why are you crying? Like, why do you even, like, it's not that bad. And now I think as a 20 years later person, my hindsight is kind of looking back on it and looking at how it affected everyone else around me and also how it completely changed my path in life. I was 16 years old and I was out clubbing with my friends in Brighton. We like to skip over the fact that I was 16 and I was out clubbing, but, you know, that's what you do. And to my knowledge, me and my friends had hidden a bottle of wine on the beach and we were in a club and between the beach and the club was a strip in Brighton where all the boys would race. It was called Madeira Drive. So just next to the pier in Brighton. And what we've managed to piece together is that me and my friend left the club to go and drink this wine on the beach. And I stopped at the door to say hello to some other friends that were entering the club and then ran over to meet my friends and in the process got hit by a speeding boy racer. So I woke up 2 weeks later from being in a coma. I'd slept through Christmas. And it was New Year's Day, 2001, and I'd missed 2 weeks of my life. So So yeah, when I woke up, I remember, I'll never forget that it was Christmas number one was that song from Donnie Darko, Mad World. Oh. And I remember waking up from a coma and, like, you know, it was very sort of, as you see in the movies, looking around like with blurred vision and all these white walls and could hear beeping and things like that. And in my head, this stretch of time in my head was maybe like an hour long, but of course I was in intensive care and I would have never been left alone for maybe more than 20 seconds. So, you know, that was a very strange time warp that happened then, and that song was happening.
How long did it take to piece all together? I mean, was this over, you know, once you began to wake up and your dad had explained to you you were in a car accident, you know, was this a number of weeks, days? How long to kind of start piecing?
It's strange, isn't it? It's a little bit like remembering your childhood for me, because you're piecing together things that you've heard and things that you've been told and things that you've seen and what are actually your memories and what are things that you were told had happened. So I think it was over probably the next 2 years where I started to kind of remember the evenings, events and the week up to it a little bit more. But, you know, I was 16. There wasn't anything major happening. I was just going to school and seeing my friends and then going out, and that happened.
And your recovery time, how long were you in the hospital for?
So recovery time, so I was in intensive care for 2 weeks and then I was on a ward for 2 weeks. So I was in the hospital for a month and then I went home, and I think I was like walking around by February, so 2 months later. And then, so I had these external fixators that, so my pelvis was broken in 12 places. Oh. So I had these, this metal that kind of came out of my pelvis and across the front of my waist. So I went home in them and all sorts of other bits of metal inside my body, but where those external fixators were taken out, it didn't ever heal properly. So I kept going in to have these operations to have it kind of healed. It basically wasn't healing over. And it turned out that I had MRSA in my bones. So I ended up having to go back to hospital for another month, 6 months later. So in the July, August of 2001, I'm getting my dates probably messed up. If my mum listens to this, it'll be completely different. I had to go back and I ended up having to do my GCSE exams in hospital, attached to this machine that eradicated MRSA from my bones. So, yeah, so I guess it was like a year recovery with 2 month stints in hospital and about 10 operations, I think.
Oh, my word. I mean, that's an incredible amount of physical trauma as well as the actual emotional trauma of, you know, it really feels like before and after. Right.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you were just a normal, you know, sneaking bottles of wine, 16-year-old teenager before, and then you had this completely different journey afterwards. Like, what has been your hindsight thoughts around all of that? Like, have you know? I'm sure the healing is still going on in many ways. Is it?
Yeah. Well, I guess the key thing is that you're changing so much at that age. Like if this happened to me now, it would be like, you know, so kind of deep and spiritual, and I'd probably have some awakening and, you know, all this. But I think when you're 16 and everything is changing anyway, it's difficult for me to know what was that and what was just me changing. Yes. So for example, I was, despite my leaving wine on the beach and clubbing, I was a really keen athlete and I wanted to go to Loughborough for university and study sports. And I wanted to pursue that as a career. And then this stopped me being able to play the sports that I did still play heavily. So I played football, I played roller hockey, and I did athletics. And after this accident, I didn't do them anymore and ended up pursuing a career in the arts and in the music industry, as you know. So I wonder if my calling would have been in athletics. I think I probably would have ended up as a PE teacher. Wow. I don't think I was, you know, I'd say now that I was destined for like country football, but I probably wasn't, let's be honest. But yeah, my path did drastically change in that moment. And I think that the kind of hindsight is that, so there were a number of adults that it heavily affected, obviously. My sister, who was doing A-levels at the time, it just must have been horrendous that her, you know, little sister was, you know, A, that sick, but B, having that much attention for the next however many years, probably until now. Like, it's still, you know, I still have a different air about me within the family because of this accident. And there was a particular... So basically the ambulance driver is a man called Martin. And in 2014, so, you know, 13 years after this accident, I ran the London Marathon. And I did it to raise money for Road Peace, which is a charity that helps victims of car accidents. And it was in the local paper, and I got a message on Facebook from this man saying, "You're not going to remember me, but my name's Martin, and I was the ambulance driver that was the first on the scene that day." And basically, we ended up getting to know each other. We ended up going on BBC's Radio 4 and going on the Listening Project. He came to my 30th birthday, and he's like a family friend now. And he was someone that my mum remembers a lot because he would come up to an intensive care and just sit with me after his shift. And when I left intensive care, he just kind of shot off into the distance and was never seen. And it was almost like he was a guardian, you know, a little angel that was coming and making sure I was okay. But it turns out that that was one of the last calls he ever did, because it affected him so heavily.
Wow!
Because he had a 16-year-old daughter, and he was just like, "I can't do this job anymore." And there were all sorts of details about the actual call out that weren't particularly pleasant, which he recalls in this Listening Project that we did that's on the internet and Radio 4 somewhere. So it affected him very heavily. Like, you know, the stories that I've heard of my mum at that time. And at the time when I was 16, I was like, "Oh, why is everyone making such a big deal out of this? I'm fine." You know, like getting out and being in a wheelchair and wanting to go clubbing. And when my parents were like, "You know, is this a good idea?" I'd be like, "Oh, of course it is." But yeah, now being 36, 20 years later, and, you know, expecting a child of our own, I'm like, you know, starting to understand it all a little bit more. So yeah, that's the hindsight of something like this, I think.
And your body, you know, how, like, have you had to sort of, not say had to, that sounds incorrect, but like, do you think you still feel trauma in your body, the physical body?
Yeah. So again, I think what's being, you know, because again, your body's changing so much at that time, it's hard to know. Like, I might stand up now and my hip might hurt, and I'm like, does that hurt with everybody because it's a weird position, or is that because I've, you know, broken my pelvis in X number of places? I mean, I definitely have like a little, like everyone calls it, my gangster limp. Like, I have a little bit of a drag on my leg when I'm tired and things like that. I think, you know, there's been various things. So for example, I got a thyroid condition recently, and I think that's to do with stress, and I got it as a reaction to over exercise and I think that was a way of my body saying, like, "Really, are you really like actually trying to stress me out again?"
Kidding.
Yeah. And, you know, like, there's the book that called The Body Keeps the Score, and I've read things like that where I think there's definitely like stress that is held within my body from this experience that it now wants to keep a level of homeostasis, not kind of go out of it.
Yeah, I'm a great believer in the body keeping score. I haven't read that book, but I can imagine the contents. I remember reading in an obituary in England somewhere, actually, in a doctor's surgery, I think. And I'm so sorry I didn't write down the name, but this man referenced a book that his father had given him. And the quote from it was something like, what the eyes do not cry in tears, the body will cry in pain. Mm. So what we don't deal with, what we don't heal, the body will keep the score and it'll come back. It's great that you can hear it, though, in a sense that if you're, you know, if you're exercising too much and something kind of goes a little bit out of whack, you're aware, well, actually, maybe I need to keep chill. And have you now in your, you know, more adult space had those kind of deeper conversations with your mother or your parents around what it was like for them to see their daughter, you know?
I think my parents would probably say no. But I think I still feel like it's talked about all the time because it's me, you know, and it's been such a kind of, running theme throughout my life. Like after that, for the next few years, I was like the girl that got run over at school and, you know, There were still lots and lots of appointments. And I still feel like it's talked about relatively a lot in my family. But if you ask my mum, she's like, you never, you know, you put it away and put a lid on it and didn't talk about it. So I feel like yes, and I feel like I'm very aware of how terrible it was. Maybe I need to be told again. I'm sure these conversations will carry on throughout my life, particularly as I have children as well.
And does that feel annoying? It's not like a strange question, but does that feel kind of irritating? Does that feel like, seriously, are we still?
I think it's something that, like, I quite enjoy talking about on my terms.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, I think another theme of when it happened, so when I was 16 and a teenager, was that, like, my mum, my family probably almost felt like it happened to them because I slept through it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I was like, oh, it happened to me. Why are you all so upset by this? But now I really understand that I almost was not even in the equation. But of course I was. But the worst part of it, I was not there for.
Okay. I mean, it's a huge thing to happen. It's so huge and an incredible story and an incredible journey of healing and change. And I just think trauma like that, must have so many prongs of stuff to consider. And, you know, that may sound like a strange question, like, do you get sick, you know, but, you know, if an identity is kind of put on you, like you were the girl who got knocked down, you know, I'm sure that can feel a bit sort of like, seriously, I'm still just me underneath it all. Mm. And did you spend much time, or have you spent any time in your brain, like, would your brain flip to what if it didn't happen? Or do you feel you've been able to really just, it sounds like you've just fully accepted, well, this is what happened and this is where I am and this is where the path took me. But did you have any of that kind of, probably in your younger years, anger moments of?
When I was younger, I probably did. I think, so we spoke a little bit about, before we started recording, about this fertility journey that me and my partner have also been on recently. And we've had 6 years of IVF and miscarriages each, and I found this a lot harder than I did being run over and recovering from that. And I think, you know, there's an element of glory of being the person that got run over and survived, whereas when you become the person that's trying to do something that can't do it, that's a lot harder. And of course, like, nothing I kind of consciously did was why I survived. I mean, there might have been things that I did in terms of my physical fitness when I was young and things that would have definitely counted towards me surviving. But, you know, there wasn't like a moment that I needed to go and get glory for doing that.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, I found the last few years of IVF and miscarriage and loss a lot harder than I did that. And I also wonder if there was an element of with this stage of being like, you know, I think I felt it was quite unfair. I think I was like, I've had my trauma. Yeah. Like, why am I getting this now?
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, life is full of trauma, and two big events 20 years apart is not beyond the realms of possibility of what will happen in your lifetime. And I'll have more as I get older, and people die and I die. And, you know, so I think that, you know, you have to sort of think realistically about life and what it is, and the fact that you do have, you know, life is essentially a series of problems that you have to somehow solve. Yeah, exactly.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Congratulations. It's so very exciting that there's a baby on the horizon, and we look forward to hearing about the safe arrival and the new motherhood journey for you both. While you mentioned not doing anything in particular to survive, although, yes, the fitness of your body would have, I'm sure, played a huge part in your recuperation. Like, I hear a very strong mental, a strong mentality. That's a better word. I think that can't be overlooked, surely. Do you ever give yourself credit for that? That, you know, it, like, it's one thing to heal some broken bones, but it's a whole other to hold everything together within yourself at that young age and, you know, be quite ready to go back out clubbing in your wheelchair at 17 or whatever age you were. It sounds like have you considered that or kind of?
Yeah, I think kind of strength / bullheadedness / like tenacity and things are a real value that I hold. I think definitely when these are strong values in someone, sometimes you have some of the other potentially softer values may suffer a little bit. Like I know full well that I'm not very good at empathy. Okay. And I work on that all the time. I think strength and tenacity and getting through things are things that I pride myself on being good at, but I think, yeah, it doesn't come with, you know, shade in other areas.
Of course. Yeah, of course. As one rises up, something else falls off the tree, so to speak.
So I think it's like constantly seeking balance, I guess.
Yeah.
And I've definitely felt within the past few years that strength trying, like, cracking a little bit, like I say, with this IVF journey, that's just been a lot harder than any of that was. But I think all of that has been learning as well. And I think I've probably softened over the last few years as well, which has probably been nice for certain people in my life. So yeah, it's all about finding the right balance. And, you know, we're all just constantly evolving and changing, and there's nowhere that we're trying to get to, is there? It's just...
No, there isn't. Have you had that kind of philosophical thought through that going, well, yes, I thought it was going this way, but ultimately this was what was kind of not supposed to happen, but sort of laid out for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know, I really flip between different levels of woo, and I don't know how how much for me, I'm not religious, but I believe in the power of the human spirit and the universe. And I don't necessarily think that there's one path that was laid out for me, but I also believe that I trust myself to make the right choices that will take me to wherever I'm supposed to go. And I think I do believe in the, there's a quote that's like, don't ask why me, ask what are you teaching me? And I think I try and remember that, because I have had a lot of times throughout my life where I could ask why me. And if I'm honest, I have, you know, particularly in the last few years, been like, really, is this actually happening again? So to put it into context, in the last 3 years, my wife and I have had 3 miscarriages between us. So there were definitely moments in there where I was like, you know, what are you trying to teach me? Actually, not even asking what are you trying to teach me, just being like, for fuck's sake, how is this happening again? Why me? Yeah. Fist banging on the floors. But yeah, I think it's an ongoing journey to find out why things have happened, not even why they happened, because that's probably too philosophical for me, but more, what have I learned from this? Mm-hmm.
Did you ever meet the guy? I'm assuming it was a boy racer, but
yeah, I did. So we had a court case, and we didn't meet at the court case, but we met in a club a couple of years later. So he was only 19 at the time. So I was 16, he was 19, and I remember there being a bit of a commotion and. His name, everyone knew his name, and it was like, Harriet, he's here, he wants to talk to you. And I was like, okay. So we had to like go meet in this like corner of the club, and it was fine. I think if we make the movie, we'll have to make it a little bit more dramatic than it actually
okay,
was.
Okay, yeah, embellish it a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was fine.
Wow. And was there a kind of... It doesn't sound like you needed him to say sorry. That's what I'm hearing. I could be wrong, but I'd imagine he needed your blessing.
If I remember correctly, it was a I'm sorry, but.
Oh.
It was an I'm sorry, but everyone drives fast down that road. Okay. But like, so there was an accident report done that said he was going 52 in a 30 limit. So I got hit by a car going 52 miles an hour. And I think we all know those statistics about what happens, you know, the statistics of surviving a car going that fast in relation to a car going at 30. So, yeah, I don't think it was, you know, the big friendship making moment that it could be in a film. I think it was more like, oh, okay, you're, as I thought, a 19-year-old boy, basically.
Oh, how interesting. Well, I hope you do make the movie, because I think it could be, yeah, you know, and we'll work on that section.
Yeah.
Your resilience and that tenacity within yourself, would you say that that's been the strongest life buoy for you through this journey?
Yeah, I think strength is a big one. I think strength and tenacity, and what, as I said, some people would say kind of bullheadedness, but I think the kind of focus on the other side of something when you're going through it is really important, because, you know, when something's happening, it's such a sort of pressure cooker. But I think if we sort of were to go up into space and look at the timeline of our life and then think about the moments that are the hardest, they'd be so small. But when you're in them, they feel so big. So I think that's something that I really try and think about. And when we were recently having our IVF journey, I did actually do that thinking, and I'd try and articulate it to my wife, and I'd be like, imagine we're in space and we're looking. She'd just be like, what are you talking about? And I'd be like, we're looking down at, you know, our whole life, and this is such a small piece. You know, for example, the IVF clinic shut over COVID. So everybody had this, like, everyone that was going through treatment had like a 6-month delay, and it felt so big because everything is like, I need it now, I need it now. And I do a lot of kind of, you know, that sort of bird's 200 foot view on actually thinking about it as time and being like, it's such a small proportion of our time. But of course, things have knock-on effects, which mean that they carry on as themes throughout your life. But I think we just, you know, we're all built on this, you know, Jenga block of experience and history that we sit on top of, and everything, whether it's a great experience or a terrible one, is going to contribute to that. And I think it's just important that we know that the learnings are kind of as important as the jubilant moments that we celebrate.
I think that's a really lovely, I'm with you on the going up to space or that bird's eye view. There's a very, it's almost like an Indian meditation feel about it, although I'm not suggesting that's what you're suggesting, but yeah, that it's almost like an astral plane view, isn't it? You want to kind of, you know, and that's not with any woo-woo either, but that's standing out. Or I often try and look at myself in third person going, oh, she doing it again, or, you know, it can take the judgment away. And as you say, help you see things with a little bit more clarity and the bigger picture thinking, as opposed to in the minutiae of pain and trauma of what's going on in that moment.
Yeah. And I think some of these more philosophical or spiritual practices can, and I think this is, you know, I said that sometimes I can struggle a little bit with empathy, because I think when you do a lot of that kind of thinking, you can be impatient with people that don't. And I think it's important to try and know that everybody else is at different points of thinking about things. So, you know, like a bomb could go off next to me and I'd be relatively calm. Whereas my partner wouldn't, whereas I can, you know, there might be like a loose screw on my computer and that'll really stress me out. Like, so I think micro things can really affect me, whereas macro things don't so much. And I think, I guess we all have to be sensitive that everybody has these different ways of thinking and dealing with things. And just because, yes, I'm tenacious, strong, and bullheaded, it doesn't mean everyone is. So therefore, I think it's important to try and be sensitive to the values and the kind of emotions that other people experience things in as well.
I think that's really fascinating, and thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's an incredible story. Yeah, such huge learning. I mean, there's just so much there, isn't there? There really is. It's immense. And I am thinking of your poor mom and dad within it all, I'll be honest, because
everyone does.
Oh, yeah. And when you have your small one in your arms, I think, yeah, you know, I know for me, the biggest change I had within myself becoming a mother was, it was almost like the umbilical cord that was cut between myself and the baby. I can't even describe it without sounding like a total hippie, but it was like back into, I understand whale mothers more. Oh my God, that intense feeling of protection, that it's like a button is pressed and that's through your body and you can't do anything about it. It's beyond my humanness to manage it. It's back to just pure animal instinct. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's why, I would kind of think of the mother. Obviously, you're stuck in bed having to manage all of this pain, but wow, yeah, to look at your child in that respect would, in capacity, must have been brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if they're there rolling their eyes.
Back, it's okay. She's rolling her eyes. Normal teenagedom has resumed, you know.
Yeah.
I have three very simple questions that I'm asking as a kind of continuum with through the series. They're not very deep thinking ones. What are you sorry you didn't give up earlier? Maybe you haven't given up anything.
I mean, I did all the things that you shouldn't do when I was young, but I feel like I got a hold on giving them up quite early. Like I stopped smoking in my early 20s and things like that. Something that I haven't fully given up that I wish I had is all of the kind of tendencies that a lot of women have and a lot of men to worry about what they're eating and how much they're exercising. And I think when I'm on my deathbed, that is something that I'll be like, I wish I spent less time worrying about that. I think it's important to have an awareness and an element of worry about it to stop yourself being a complete pig. But I think I waste too much energy on that.
Okay. And what are you sorry you didn't start earlier?
I think that I will, again, probably be on my deathbed wishing I'd learned to play a musical instrument and learned another language. And I'm pretty sure that I'm probably going to learn neither, but I wish I had the capacity to do it. And I don't really think it's something that you can do for 20 minutes a day. I think it's you need to go and immerse yourself in a country. And I think I'd skipped that stage of my life I think when you're young, if you do an art foundation, you don't tend to have a year out. And I did an art foundation. And I wish that I'd learned another language. And I wish that I'd done a ski season in that year.
Okay. And in hindsight, what are you most proud of to date?
The thing that always comes to my mind is running the marathon after the story of, you know, what we've been through. I think I say what we've been through. I've just talked to you about it on a podcast, but I feel like you've lived it now.
Invested.
Running a marathon is not the 5, 4, or 6 hours of running it. It's the hours of getting up on a Saturday morning in your 20s and running 22 miles. And I think I'm proud that I dedicated that year of my life to training to do that, to show myself and everyone around me that I could.
Mm. Yeah, that is an incredible thing to do, particularly after all your body had been through and your heart and your mind to pull it all together, and particularly in your 20s, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd have thought about it in my 20s and I'd have been back into Ministry of Sound and that was my marathon. So well done for that. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. And I just really appreciate your honesty and openness to converse and literally converse with somebody you've never met before and randomly messaged you out of the blue because of a weird little app called Clubhouse, which is kind of cool in its own way. And I feel a little bit more connected to it now. It's like, okay, we can meet some humans from this, you know?
Yeah.
And thank you so much. Yeah, it's really, really lovely to connect with you. I'm looking forward to the movie.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to hearing about the birth of your baby in October.
Yes. And that is, of course, the second thing that I'm most proud of. And I can't believe I didn't say that. I think it's because it's not here yet.
Yes.
It will, of course, overshadow the marathon.
Yeah. And maybe the journey between you to get there. You know, I think that's that in itself shows a lot of strength between you both, because that's not an easy thing to go back at. And as a couple, to maintain your love and friendship through it is, I'm sure, has been difficult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's inspiring and beautiful as a couple story as well. I'm very much looking forward to hearing about the baby.
If anybody ever gets a choice whether to get run over or go through IVF, get run over.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And come find me over in Hindsight Conversations on Twitter and Instagram.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.